Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by a thousand miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is the first episode of Gaming Uncensored in 2022!
We're already halfway through the first month.
Over there. Yes, we are.
Took us a while.
We have to talk about the fact that we're getting into the years, like it's 2022, right?
Yep.
And every single sci-fi movie that we've ever seen, cool stuff happens in the 20s. Like, I think it's going to be bizarre when we get to 2025, and we're talking about living in 2025. Okay, so we're getting to those weird sci-fi movie years, and I'm waiting on some, like, teleporters or phasers or, like...
Yep.
I've been watching Star Trek, so I'm on this future tech thing, And it's really weird to be in 2022.
Yes, it is very strange to be, like, it just, like, time feels like it doesn't mean anything, right? Like, just,
right.
It's just arbitrary numbers at this point. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like, when we were kids, I would have never imagined getting to the year 2022.
Right.
Like, yeah. That seems like the far future,
and now we're here, and it's like, eh. Yeah. No flying cars. Like, come on, guys.
Where's my flying car and where's my hoverboard?
That all was supposed to happen long before now. We are way behind.
So I have to say that I had a chance to see Nobody with Bob Odenkirk.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know if you've seen that.
I have not.
But it's one of those check your brain at the door like action things. But not only is it Bob Odenkirk, but Christopher Lloyd is in it as the main character's father.
Nice.
And like it blew my mind to be watching this movie, and Christopher Lloyd plays this old man in a nursing home, and I'm like, wait, that's Doc Brown.
Yeah.
That's weird. So yeah, we should have had flying cars by now. That's all I'm saying.
For sure. I just looked up. He's 83 years old. The first Back to the Future came out 40 years ago, basically. Yeah. So he was your age, basically.
Well,
that can't be right. When did Back to the Future come out? 1985. So he's 83 right now. That came out 38 years ago. And so he was, what, 45 then?
Yeah.
Man, that's brutal.
Thanks for making me feel good, buddy. I really appreciate that.
We are way closer to Doc Brown than we are Marty McFly at this point.
Yeah.
Ooh-wee.
Look, I'm okay with my age at this point because I have no other choice, right?
Right.
Uh, Look, it is what it is, and I just have to be okay. But I'm old.
Yeah.
I am happy about the fact that we are, there's a point in life, and I know that you kind of have the same thing, because you teach kids, right?
Yeah, especially now, it feels like kids.
And when you're at the point where we're at, like, I'm noticing that I listen to a lot of the same music that I always listen to, and I do a lot of the same stuff, and watch a lot of the same TV. And so I finally asked a musician friend of mine, I was like, can you help me find some good music? Like some good new music that I need to know about, because you and I know about a few things and we find some things here and there, but like I don't have the patience to like wade through all the crap that's on the radio to find the good stuff.
For sure.
And so I this musician friend of mine gave me like 6 or 8 or 10 artists that I just need to go through and listen to them. She says they're good, I swear. And she's older than we are. She's a music teacher. So she says they're good. I feel good about that.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's still good music in the world makes me happy, because most of what you hear is crap. So
that's fair. I'll tell you a band really quick to look up, because I just found them here recently, is The Marias. So one of the things I do every year, when the, Grammy nominations come out, the only award I really care about is the Best Engineered Grammy. Right. And so I'll go through as soon as the nominees are announced and go through and listen to all the nominees for the Best Engineered album. The Marias is one of the bands that's nominated this year. I'd never listened to them before. They're really cool. I have been digging them. And so they've now become part of my regular rotation of artists, which there are not many new artists in my regular rotation. So.
It makes me sad to say that, because you and I both love music. You work in the recording industry. Like, this is something that we're passionate about. And it makes me sad that I have to search for good new artists. But you do! Because the crap on the radio is crap.
Yes. Because we're to that age. Like, it's not that it's any, like, different of, like, what, you know, people who were 40-ish when we were, you know, 18 or whatever thought of the music we were listening to. It's just how it works. It's just at a point that we're to, like, popular music is trash and the music that we grew up on is good. But current popular music is trash. You know, like, it just happens every generation and we're to that point. So. Congratulations. We've made it this far.
Well,
and we're close to Christopher Lloyd's age in Back to the Future. So, yeah, feeling really, really good.
And on top of that, you have a 3.5-year-old.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, almost that, four. Her birthday is a month away, which is nuts. So
I can't, because you guys do the half birthdays. Like, it's hard for me to keep track. Like, I have to look on the calendar, like, when is it? Because it seems like I'm always seeing a Facebook post about the half birthday. And I don't begrudge her the half birthday. Like, I'm not being living grumpy up about that. That's cool. I wish we could have had half birthdays.
Yeah.
You're right. She's almost four, and that's freaky.
It is freaky. So,
And I feel like now that we've done 10 minutes of world, yes. I have to mention the fact that I saw The Matrix. I've seen The Matrix twice, and because I watched it on HBO as you did.
Yep.
And then I had a friend of mine that has been working with me as like, dude, I really want to go to the theater and see it. And I'm like, it's not really, like, it's okay. But like, I don't want to spend that money. It's like, come on, let's go. And so we did. We went to the Synergy of all things, which which I don't know if you've been to the Synergy here in town, but it's the big new fancy movie theater with the arcade and all that crap. And like, you walk in, and it's like you're walking into a circus. And my immediate thought was, I'm too old for this. And so we got our tickets, and we go in, and we watch. And, of course, I've seen it once, and I watched a, like, breakdown video that I sent you.
Yeah.
And after you see the breakdown video, like, the movie makes sense. And I totally get it, and I totally understand it, and I understand what she was trying to say, and I applaud her because, like, we're all watching a bunch of crap, and we just sort of accept it, and that's the way it is. I applaud her for that, but I'm not sure that it was worth, like, $300 million
right.
for her to make a movie about how we're all sheep, essentially. So I want to get your thoughts on that, because, like, when you watch the breakdown video that I sent, like, it all makes sense, and I'm like, that's really deep and really cool, and, like, all of that, and but I don't really know that that's what I wanted from a Matrix movie.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it is. It was definitely a, I don't know, kind of a check your brain at the door again, even though it's trying to be this deeper thing. Like, at the end of the day, like, it just ended up being this kind of goofy, fun ride that I really actually, like, I appreciate that for what it is. Because, like, we talked about this before, I think the problem with the original trilogy is it started taking itself too seriously, right? Like, the second and third movies, the fall off, especially from the second and third movie, is just crazy. And I think in part because it was trying too hard to tell a story without focusing on how that story was told, you know, making it fun and interesting and all that kind of stuff. The newest movie is fun and, you know, like, over the top, ridiculous in lots of ways. We'll get slightly spoilerish, so just in case anybody's not seen it yet and plans to, when you make Neil Patrick Harris one of the main villains in the movie, like, you're kind of going for goofy, over the top ridiculousness, you know, like, it's fun. I thought his character was great, and it was, you know, like, perfect Neil Patrick Harris. But it was also, like, the whole time you're watching it, you're like, that's Neil Patrick Harris. You know, like, you don't ever get into, like, oh, the new architect of the Matrix, whatever, whatever. You know, you're like, ah, that's Neil Patrick Harris. You know, like, I know that dude. He's funny. Like, I get it.
Yeah, like, that's who he is. Or Barney. Like,
yes.
I kept waiting on him to say suit up.
Or legendary. Yes, it was very much like just that character, like, who he is, what he does, kind of thing. And that with Keanu Reeves, and then, like, the fact that the Agent Smith is the guy that is like, in Frozen and in Hamilton, and so Genevieve, like, knows this dude well because it's in all this stuff that she's into, you know, and so by proxy I know who he is, but not in that kind of role. It was fun to watch him in that role, you know, and, like, whatever, like, it was just fun. But yeah, it's, at the end of the day, like, I didn't get any, like, deep, like, life-changing meaning out of it, like the original Matrix movie was. Like, you know, when we were young, that was an influential movie. Like, people were, like, building whole philosophies around that. That's not what the new Matrix movie is, but it is fun.
So the fact that there was no Hugo Weaving as Agent Smith.
Right.
And the fact that there was no Lawrence Fishburne as Morpheus.
Which was very strange.
It would have been better if those two people had been there. And I think I would have enjoyed it more. It's a movie. And the idea that they're going to do two more, like, really?
Are they? I hadn't heard that.
That's the whole thing. Like, that was the entire point with the movie, is she's essentially saying, like, they told me they're gonna do this with or without me, whether or not I want to do it or not. So screw y'all, and I'm gonna put this out, and here's what I think, and they're gonna make us do two more. Like, that's the whole point with the. You know, first hour of the movie.
Oh, sure. I just didn't get that literally as talking about what The Matrix. Yeah.
I think they're gonna do two more.
It's weirdly it tries too hard to be meta, and like the whole video game thing was super cheesy to me or whatever. Again, it is fun as just like I had to kind of like grit my teeth to get through a few parts of it that was like, this is a little over the top, guys.
Yeah, it was okay. All right.
It was fun. Do I need to watch again? Like, just like you were saying, like, probably not. Will I go back and watch the original Matrix movie again at some point? Absolutely. Will I watch any of the rest of them again? Maybe again. If there's another one that comes out, I want a refresher again. But I don't have any need to see the rest of them. The original movie is a masterpiece. The rest of them are, okay. The new one's better than 3, for sure. You know?
Yes.
no doubt about that. Probably on par with the second one, somewhere in that ballpark. Decent, but not amazing. And, that's okay. And especially because it was on HBO. I didn't, have to go to a theater to see it or whatever. I was able to watch it on HBO. I'm perfectly happy with that. Right where I want it. It's a lot of money to spend on a movie that's on HBO, but of course had theatrical release and everything else. But all that to say, it was fine. I liked it. It was fine, but it wasn't world changing.
So that's exactly how I feel. And of course, we're probably going to get calls from some guys that are like, "It's awesome!" And we totally want that. Our voicemail is still alive.
Yes.
I know because I checked this week. We've got some voicemail from a couple of guys.
About that. Yeah, we need to get those in.
Which we need to play those at some point.
Yep.
That's still alive. So if you want to leave us a voicemail, it is 509-GAME-210. Tell us why The Matrix 4 is awesome. Because I think we're both in agreement it was just sort of okay.
Yeah, fine.
And yeah,
it's an okay way. Like if you're a fan of the series or you like Keanu Reeves or whatever, like you really do. Like, let me just one thing here. Not that anybody listening to this podcast isn't a fan of The Matrix, I would guess, our demographic are going to that's the concentric circle of Venn diagrams between Gaming Uncensored listeners and Matrix fans, I would imagine. Assuming that you haven't seen The Matrix Resurrections yet, it does rely heavily on you knowing what happened in the original trilogy. Like it leans on itself a lot. It's worth, because both of us did this, it's worth a rewatch of the originals before you go see the new one, if nothing else, just so you're up to speed on what's going on in the new ones. Even 3, because the whole resurrected thing is reliant on what happens in the third Matrix movie. And so,
right.
Yeah. So anyway, all that said, big thanks to the Patreon guys. Got to get those guys in here because they're the ones we'll likely hear from here. So Cabbage Jose, Narc Duff, Josh, Hector Spider, Spencer Kavosh, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, Sam, and Andrew. Thank you guys for your support. We are paying some bills with your money right now and then also doing some fun stuff. And so if you'd like to support us on Patreon, you can do that by going to gaminguncensored.com. Click on that Become a Patron link and support us over there. You can see the video version of this podcast. And so, it's a fun time.
Which, by the way, I watched about 10 minutes of the one where we're together. The video version of this show is a whole lot better when we're in the same room.
Yes.
I'm just saying, it's a whole lot better.
Yeah.
It's still not really something that I feel like is necessary for us to do. But
it's definitely better. For sure.
So
100%.
So if you want to see the show on video, definitely go over to the Patreon and join us over there, because we do the show on video every week for reasons that I don't really understand. But hey, you guys like it, so I'm cool with it.
That's right. Here we are.
So. That said, I have had a chance to play a few games, not that many. I did finish Telltale Batman, The Enemy Within. That was really good. Really, really like those games. I think I said that a couple of weeks ago. It did not disappoint. I after I finished that, I restarted the final season of The Walking Dead, and I have to say that I played about 5 minutes of it, and I got the floor wiped because I can't push button fast enough. And so I say again what I said 2 weeks ago. If there's any more of those types of games, can we please put an autopilot in there for those of us that don't want to mash buttons? Yeah. Like, I, you're a gamer, your fingers work, everything works. I'm not absolutely certain that you wouldn't use the autopilot feature.
Sure. Yeah, and definitely at times, because like with something like a Telltale game and similar design to that, at times the QuickTime events just feel like arbitrary, make sure you're not asleep kind of thing. And it's like, I don't need that, you know, like it's not important for me to have a check-in from the video game to make sure I'm still paying attention, you know, like if you're going to tell me story. If you want me to do something, let me do something. But if you're going to interrupt my storytelling with me needing to hit a button randomly, it feels contrived. Like you got to make it a little bit more purposeful. There's games, and Telltale has done it well in a lot of ways that QuickTime events work just fine. Telltale falls victim to it being just random messiness at times as well.
I realized when I restarted the final season of The Walking Dead that they actually did a better job with Batman the Enemy Within than they did with The Walking Dead, because when they ask you to push a button in Batman, all you have to do is push that button. In The Walking Dead, you're trying to move while pushing the button. Like, the way that Batman works out is when you're in an action sequence, like, there is no other movement. It's focusing on whatever that button combination is. Man, when you move that, the actual having to move also on top of that into The Walking Dead, it's really hard for a guy whose fingers don't work.
Yeah.
And we had that happen with A Way Out.
Yeah.
Like, that's the last thing that we played together. Like, I'm just not fast enough. And you had to reach over and mash a key. And you're like, we don't need that.
Yeah. By the way, we were talking about games we played since last we did a show, because it's been a while. A Way Out is a game we played that we haven't talked about on the show at all yet. And so that was, I am trying to think what the last like couch co-op thing we played together was. I can't come up with it. It's been long, so freaking long. It was really, really fun. We did play Toe Jam and Earl last year, so that's true. But that said, A Way Out was a lot of fun to play together, and I'm looking forward to us picking that up. We could play it online. We could finish it online. I think we got to wait till we're back in the same room to finish that one.
Yeah,
it's just the way it needs to be played.
No, I don't want to do that online. Sorry.
But it's really fun. I thoroughly enjoyed that. It's kind of that same thing where it's, you know, it's not quite a Telltale kind of narrative, but it is very heavily, you know, dependent on storytelling. It's very linear, all these things, but there's more interaction to it. Mostly kind of puzzle problem solving in between, you know, the story elements. If you've got a buddy and you just want to kill, I don't know, probably 6-7 hours, I'm guessing, is about how long that game is based off how long we've played it already. It's a good way to kill that time. It's an interesting story. It's fun. It's you know, it makes you work together cooperatively. I really dug it. I was having a really good time with that. I'm excited for us to pick it up again.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the next time I see you, because that was a lot of fun to do a little couch co-op. And the other thing that you did that I managed to get caught up on this week was you played about an hour and a half more of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And one thing I want to mention about that, we've talked about that ad nauseum and how good that is, and so I don't want to go into that, but at some point in the process, something happened with the streaming, the streaming on the PlayStation, and I lost about 20 or 30 minutes of you breaking the ship out and getting to nowhere. And so I had to go find that from somewhere else. And I did just that 20 or 30 minute piece, whatever it was.
Right.
And I realized that based on what I watched, we're about the video that I watched the missing parts from is the first part of the game. It's a two-part video series that this guy did. And this first video is 7 hours.
Yeah.
And we're like 4 hours into it. And so I say that to tell you that we have a very long way to go on Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I think that's going to end up being a 20-25 hour game. And the reason that I find that interesting is for the things that we've already talked about as far as that game is concerned with the dialogue and the way that they did things. I cannot see that holding up for 20 or 25 hours. And I would not have thought the game was going to go that long until I found this video from this other guy.
Yeah.
That's mind-bending.
Yeah.
That they built this 25-hour thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And all of that, especially the dialogue. I just can't imagine all of the writing that went into it, all the dialogue after all that. We've talked about like games like Mass Effect that have all the branching dialogue and all that stuff, and just the sheer amount of dialogue that's in there. But the fact that this is just constant, that is just, there's never a break from the dialogue. Like, it's always going, and it's always good. It's well delivered, it's well written, it's interesting. Like, I get caught up sometimes. I'm just standing there listening to dialogue, and I'm like, oh, I should be like walking, going somewhere, yeah. You know, because you can just stand there and listen to the dialogue all day. Which again, it's well done. They did a good job, and just crazy. So
I'm amazed, like I said, the fact that that game's going to end up being 20 to 25 hours, that's an achievement.
Yep.
Like, we talked about that I think that was in the running for Game of the Year with the Video Game Awards. And I got to say, if it pans out, and I'm holding my breath that it's going to pan out.
Sure.
I'm not sure that's not my game of the year.
Yeah, that's fair. It's really good, surprisingly good. Yeah, for two dudes that aren't really that into Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, like, it's not like we have a like personal attachment to this franchise or anything like that. Just good game. They did a good job with it. All in all, well done. So.
Yep.
All that said, we do have some news. Should we get into the news?
Absolutely.
So big thing that's happened since last we did a show is CES. CES happens beginning of every year, which isn't a gaming-centric event per se. There's always gaming stuff that happens with it. There's a couple of big news stories that came out of the gaming stuff. There's also, like, Chevy debuted their new electric pickup, you know, like, it's that kind of stuff too, that's totally outside this world. But it's always fun, it's always fascinating. BMW, I think, has a car that you can change the color of, like, you could, with an app on your phone, you can change the exterior color of the car, which was super cool. Always these weird concept vehicles, lots of crazy computer stuff, all that fun stuff. TV, so LG had their big new screen with new whatever LED technology. I can't keep up with all at this point. So
did I tell you that did I tell you that my brother bought a frame TV?
You did tell me that. Yeah.
Okay. He swears by this thing and he says that I have to have one. And I hesitate to say anything on the air, but I'm going to, we're in the process of putting together a space for E3 that is not my house that I have lived in forever, and I'm really excited about it. my brother swears that I need to spend some money and buy a frame TV.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I have not seen the thing yet. I have not been to his house. He has two of them.
Yeah.
And he says it's the best money he's ever spent. I can't imagine, like, a TV being just a screen with no guts in it. I can't imagine that, but that's what this is.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much money we're going to spend on the E3 area TV, but I think we're going to end up spending some money, so that's good to hear.
Yes, for sure. So that said, a couple of big kind of gaming related things that came out of CES. One, NVIDIA, no surprise here, has even new cards and stuff that they're doing. So they have a new top end card. Their new flagship is the RTX 3090 Ti, which is 40 teraflops of performance, 24 gigs of built on RAM, just crazy. Crazy stuff, ridiculous stuff. But they also announced more consumer line cards as well that are going to be significantly cheaper, 3060, I think, whatever it was. So both new high-end NVIDIA cards that you're not going to be able to find and new more consumer-friendly video cards you're probably also not going to be able to find. But NVIDIA not slowing down with the cards. They just keep cranking those things out at this point.
Can we have a discussion about, so I am torn. Like, I understand they're a video card company. That's what they do. And it's CES, and that's what you do is show off new tech. And they have this and great and whatever. We can't even buy the current generation cards that they have because you can't buy them. Yeah. Okay, so I don't know how I feel about them saying, okay, we have these new flagships when I can't buy the last generations of cards that were out there. And the same applies to, I got a text from Spider a couple days ago. He's always in these Newegg drawings for the opportunity to buy stuff. And he sends me a picture of a PlayStation 5, and all it says is, I got picked.
Nice. Right?
And so I start looking at the picture, and he got picked for the opportunity to buy a PlayStation 5. For a whopping $930, right? And so I didn't see the price initially.
Right.
I had to go back and look. I saw the price. And I'm like, I understand that you got picked for this opportunity, but you didn't pay that, did you? And he was like, no. and so that's where we are. And I think I kind of talked about this on the last show, but I may have brought this up with Horizon Forbidden West coming out in about a month. It doesn't make sense to me for people to start talking about new tech when we can't actually buy the tech that is out now for a reasonable price.
Yeah.
Like, we could. We have the money is available. Like, we could, but I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to pay $700-$800 for an Xbox One X. I'm not going to pay $930 for. I'm just not.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I feel about these companies saying, hey, we got this new tech and you need to check it out when I can't get the current tech.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's definitely something to that. But at the same time, you also can't just disappear, you know. And
right. It's
not their fault per se that they can't get the chips. They got to keep making something. And so this is the way they keep themselves relevant. And so, hey, great, great card if you can get it. And if not, try to get one of these other ones we have. And if not that, we've got this new lower series. If not that, you know, like it just, you kind of keep going down the list until somebody's like, hey, I picked up a 2080 and I'm thrilled about it, you know? And you're like, cool. Yeah. Like, that's great. But that's, you know, a little bit behind at this point. So. I don't think this was a CES announcement from NVIDIA, but just recently they've announced a higher tier for GeForce Now, where you can have I think it's a 3080 that you're on the server that you're playing on, but it's like crazy expensive because I was like, hey, let's look. I'll play with that a little bit, and it's like three times the price for the 3080 tier. It's wild how much more expensive that is.
Well, the reason it's more expensive is because we're grandfathered in on that on the $50 which year is nice. Price, and for everybody else, the price that we're paying is like $100 a year.
That's fair.
And so, the new upgraded deal is $200 a year. But here's my issue with that. Like, okay. That is, I would pay that if I had the internet to be able to do that, and you have to have the screen availability. So again, you have the limitation of, you have access to this fancy rig with 3080 and HDR and 120 frames per second and all of that. But you have one screen in your house that can handle that, and you just got that.
Yeah.
Right? So, again, it's kind of the same deal. Like, that's nice, but I don't have the tech to use it at this point, so it doesn't make sense.
For sure. And it's just, you know, a crazy amount of money that you still have to buy the games on top of that. Like that's not a game subscription. It's just access to this cloud server that you have to supply your own games for. That said, I still love it. We're paying for it. I'm not going to stop paying for it. It's great. Especially at this point where you can't find these cards. And even if I had the money to go buy one of the cards and you can't find it. And so for having a gigabit internet connection, it gives me access to it, which is cool. So, good on NVIDIA, even if you can't buy their cards. Really quick, I'll mention one other thing before we get to probably the biggest gaming announcement from CS. Alienware has a cloud server for your house that's called Nix, that you can set up in your house to have all of your games accessible. The idea here really is between rooms and devices and that kind of stuff. You have this one unit, one PC, one server that you have in your house, and then you can play your games, you know, on whatever screen you want or whatever, which I would imagine includes also you could access it online. And so you would have access to your library going different places from your house or whatever, which is a cool concept. And Alienware can execute something like that. I don't know the practicality of it when we're talking about things that exist like GeForce Now. This is essentially the same thing, except for it's local to you. And so the thing with GeForce Now, especially if you're not on even the kind of mid-tier that we're on, like there is the possibility of getting kicked off a game or not having availability. You have to wait in line, all that kind of stuff. Obviously, if you have your own hardware at home, you don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. You're dealing with what you have. So that's all well and good. I don't know. A pretty niche market, it feels like, for this device, though.
So an Alienware has always been that computer that is if you have a whole lot of money and you just need something to spend your money on, that's what an Alienware is. Like,
for sure.
There's nothing really special or really spectacular about those computers, except that they're just a really good way to spend excess money that you have. And this is another one of those things.
Yep. They're good computers that are priced up by 40% or whatever. Like you get the fancy lights and a sleek design if that's your thing or whatever. But you could build the same thing for a whole lot cheaper if you're so inclined, and it's not terribly difficult to do. So the big announcement came from Sony. Again, gaming wise, I would say this is probably the biggest announcement, and that's the VR2. Sony PlayStation VR 2 officially exists. It's coming out. I don't think there's a release date anywhere here yet, but coming. Definitely an upgrade from what PlayStation VR is right now. Going to be 4K HDR, 2000 by 2040 per eye, per screen. Refresh rates of 90 to 120 hertz. And so compared not to only what the current PlayStation VR is, but to what other VR headsets are out there, it is competitive fidelity-wise, even with something like the Valve Index or Vive or something like that. It will be the inside-out tracking, same thing now, so you don't have to have the sensors, which is nice. There are some control things, some fidelity things that are better with the sensors, the kind of way that the Vive does it. But the convenience of having a not sensor-based setup is really, really nice. And you don't have to find places in your room to put these sensors and all that kind of stuff. It will be wired. That was one of the things that people were wondering about. Was it going to be wireless? It will be wired. It will be a single wire. And so this is if you use like the Oculus Quest in link mode, that you have that one USB cable. It'll be like that, which for the purposes of not having dropout, not having to worry about wireless technology, all that kind of stuff, I'm fine with. It'll be interesting to see, because there have been some rumors about them also having a standalone kind of mode like the Oculus Quest does. There was no talk of that at this point. It'll be interesting to see if they add that or do something with that. And then one last thing, it will have eye tracking. And so it will actually follow your gaze in the headset, which is, to me, because I haven't played any VR that has eye tracking, I would think is kind of that next thing, because one of the issues in VR is that your peripheral is, at least for me, always more out of focus than my peripheral in real life is, and that it's whatever you're looking directly at looks really good. Whatever you're not looking directly at doesn't look as good. And if you move your eyes without moving your head, like you start looking at the unfocused areas. And so with the eye tracking, you can work on some of that stuff and keep kind of, you know, with the realism there, which will be great if it works out that way. I don't know, again, how high quality and that is. But that's the future of VR for sure.
I noticed the last time, when I watched a little bit of the show that we did when we were here, it's something that bugs me about myself. It's part of the reason I wear these, because my eyes just go everywhere. Yeah. Like, I can't focus. Even if I'm looking at you, if I'm thinking about something or talking about something, I look like I'm looking up and I'm fixing to pass out. Like, that's what it looks like. And so I can't imagine what my cerebral palsy eyes would do with that. Like, I have a hard time with VR anyway.
Sure.
With the focus issues and all that. So that's... Yeah, that's, I don't know. Interesting, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if it would help or hurt. You know, like, it might make the experience a whole lot more pleasant for you. It might not. Yeah. Who knows at this point? But it'll be interesting to see. Also, apparently, it does have vibration on the headset itself, like rumble in the headset, which is an interesting thought. It'll be fun. You get shot in the head and you feel it. And then controller-wise, they didn't show the controllers, but they described the controllers. Traditional VR controllers with a bunch of buttons. We like buttons, and so I'm glad that they'll have VR controllers with buttons. And so you'll have the kind of standard PlayStation buttons, triangle, square, circle, X on both sides. You'll have two shoulder buttons. You'll have two sticks, all that kind of stuff. They will also obviously be motion sensing. That's a given, I would say, for VR, but you'll have that. It'll have haptic feedback like the PlayStation controller does, and so all of that stuff it just makes sense. It's VR for the PlayStation 5, and it's exactly, I think, what you would expect VR for the PlayStation 5 to be.
I'm excited about that, because I've noticed that in my personal life I have a Harmony One remote that I got off Amazon or eBay or somewhere that comes with a hub, and I like it. It doesn't need IR, and it can do Bluetooth and all this stuff. But the thing that I hate about the remote is that it has this, you need like big touchscreen. All these buttons are on the touchscreen. I hear a little girl and she's
I do too. I don't know what she's doing, but I hear her too.
So I have all these buttons on the touchscreen, and it's an awful remote for a handicapped guy because when I'm trying not to bump a button, like I'm bumping a button on the touchscreen that I'm trying not to push. And as weird as it sounds, I do not want a remote or any type of game controller that does not have a physical button. Like, I want a physical button to push.
Yep.
I do not like touchscreens because I will inevitably bump the wrong thing.
Yep. Yeah, so we've been preaching
We've
been preaching this from the days of Xbox Kinect. That we want buttons. Gamers like buttons. Give us buttons. So yeah. Sony is continuing to give us buttons, which is a good thing. So moving on to off CES, a few other things before we wrap up. E3, we've talked about E3. We've got some plans already brewing for E3. E3 has their own plans brewing, i.e. not being in person again. And honestly, we've been talking about this for years at this point, but this is probably about the death knell in E3 as a, 3 days in LA event. Those days seem to be gone. So the ESA put out a statement saying that because of COVID-19 and the ongoing issues around that, we will not be holding an in-person E3 in 2022. We were excited about the future of E3 and looking forward to more detailed announcements and whatever. That's all well and good, and I definitely don't begrudge anybody who's wanting to be cautious because of COVID and that kind of stuff. It does feel like they're looking at COVID right now as a way to go, hey, we don't actually have to do this because we don't think this is super viable anymore, and I think they're probably right. The last couple of years that we've seen E3 as this kind of online event because of COVID, it's generally worked okay, and we've turned into this summer of game announcements as opposed to this 3 days of game announcements, and that's probably what we're turning into, and it was fairly inevitable, and we're just seeing that happen.
Well, and I will tell you, I will make a promise right here before we get invaded by a little girl. As long as we're doing this show, you and I are going to do a week for E3.
Yep.
Like there will never be a time where I want to do E3 like this.
Yeah.
Like I'm glad that we have the technology to do this show remotely. We've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm glad we have it, but this is not fun. Like, this is not the way I want to do the show.
Sure.
And so, no matter what happens with E3, we're going to be together for at least a week every year, because that's what we do.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, fortunately, E4 changed from the Electronic Entertainment Expo extravaganza to us as idiots explaining entertainment extravaganza. So, we're covered. We don't need E3. We don't need the ESA here anymore. E4 lives on. E4 is not going anywhere. So we will still be here for sure. What that looks like when that happens, who knows at this point, but it will continue to exist. There will be something E3 this year. I'm really curious if there's anything E3 next year. I mean, I really think that we could be seeing that, like, not going out with a bang, but going out with a whimper kind of with E3. Does Microsoft show up? Does EA show up? Does Nintendo show up? Does Ubi show up? If one or a couple of those decide that it's just not worth their time to do it officially with the ESA anymore, I think it's pretty well gone. Again, maybe it's time for it to move on. Maybe it's time for us to do something different. Sony hasn't done it for the past couple of years. Sony has done their own thing and it's worked out well. They just do it in, like, this year was in August or whatever. That's fine. Apparently, Sony has something coming up in a couple of weeks that we may see more of around the Horizon launch. And so who knows? But E3 is going to be different.
I think it's going to be very much like everything is at this point. Like, the Game Awards were virtual for a couple of years, and you get used to it and you're like, okay, yeah, this is the way it's going to be. And then this year, and even Jeff said it, like, it's really good to be back in an auditorium with a crowd and live people. It's like, I really miss this. And so, yeah, I think it's going to go away, but I also think in a couple or 3 years, there's going to be somebody like Jeff that says, hey, we all need to get together as an industry. And it may not be like E3 like we remember, but I really feel like it. You can say that this is the way it's going to be, but I really feel like, especially with COVID continuing to rage, that the desire for the industry to get together as a whole is always going to be there. And I think some of that's going to happen that we're not going to expect.
Yeah, I think Jeff Keighley is probably the guy who will do it, because he's been doing this summer of gaming or whatever it is for the last couple of years as well. I could easily see him, you know, trying to kind of take up that mantle. And what's going to go away, what's not going to exist anymore, is kind of the show floor side of E3, because there's just not a need for it anymore. Like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, like, it was such a big deal because it was the only way that both kind of the media, and especially, you know, not the high-end media, but even then, like, even the high-end media in the gaming world, that was the way that you got access to a lot of these announcements and games and that kind of stuff. And that just isn't necessary anymore. Everything is so easy to communicate at this point. There's just not a need for what E3 used to offer as that in-person thing. And if you're not doing that side of it, the whole press conference thing was always in support of the show floor, right? Come see this game on the show floor. Come see more of, we'll have this at the booth for Nintendo, whatever. Like, if you're not doing that side of it, the press conference side of it doesn't have to exist in that way either. You can do PlayStation State of Play or whatever Microsoft calls there, or Nintendo Directs, and they're all great. You can do whatever you want, and that's what they're doing anyway. You know, like, it's not going to change anything. It's just having that one moment in the year that those things happen. We can still do that. We could do it over, you know, a month or a couple of months, this summer gaming thing. Like, Jeff could coordinate with each one of these companies and have their own events that he's promoting on his platforms and everything else. And that's great. You know, nothing wrong with that. And that's essentially all we ever got from E3 anyway. You know, if you weren't going to LA, you weren't getting that experience of the show floor, and that show floor experience isn't needed anymore. And so I see a lot of, you know, like, gaming journalists on Twitter, you know, sad, you know, understandably, you know, or understanding the situation, but sad that they're not going to have that kind of experience that was for, you know, gaming journalists, which was great. I'm glad they had that experience. But for the bulk of us, we didn't ever have that experience. And so it doesn't really change a whole lot for us. We love the hype and then the, you know, announcements and fun and all that stuff around E3. We love the kind of media criticism part of it too. We like to pick apart the press conferences and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, we're going to get all that info somehow. And the summer is still a really good time to make those announcements, because otherwise things are fairly dry. And so I think we'll continue to see an E3-ish thing happening, even if it's not produced by the ESA, not happening in person. All those things are going to continue in some form.
I really do believe that things are going to be different in ways that we haven't seen yet. We have a story that we're probably not going to get to. The Take-Two is picking up Zynga.
Yep.
Of all things, I watched the Zynga stock, and apparently they're going to buy the company Zynga for $12.7 billion.
Yeah,
that's insane to me.
Just wild.
And I just want to go on a small rant and say, what do we got to do to get 0.1% of that money? Look, we're holding our hands out. Somebody give us some of that money. Yeah. Because the money that is being spent in this industry is insane. I bring all of that up to say that if you're not going to spend the money on E3, the show floor, and all of that, you need to figure out a way to take that you would have spent and give back to your customers, give back to the people that are supporting your industry. Because if you don't have us, you got no job. And I talked about Epic a couple of weeks ago. I'm sure Epic's still doing some shady stuff, but they gave me games over the last 2 weeks. Yeah. Like, they had the entire new Tomb Raider, all three of those games available for free. I got Shenmue 3. I got a handful of other games that, like, I didn't even have to buy myself anything for Christmas because they're, like, here.
Yeah.
Right? And then, like, maybe I'm a sheep because that's all it takes to pacify me. But, like, you got to do something for the people that support what it is that you do. And so that's my only thing, is if none of this is going to exist anymore, and that money is there, and obviously it is for most of these companies, I'd like to see some stuff be stepped up. I really would.
Yeah, I would too. My video just died, and I'm not sure why. Yeah, I'd
see that.
So we're still recording, just without video now. So
yeah.
I will try to get the video back up and going as we are.
It looks pretty.
Wrapping up here. Yeah, it looks way better whenever it crashes. Not sure why it crashed. So anyway, if you are on Patreon, sorry that the video crashed on you. If you're just listening to the podcast, everything's fine. Ignore all this. Talk here.
Yeah,
a couple absolutely. Of quick things before we wrap up. Microsoft has officially discontinued the Xbox One, which it feels a little crazy, but makes sense. No longer making Xbox Ones, all Xbox Series S/X. It's the progression. Microsoft, it feels like, always stops production quicker, and so it makes sense. But it does feel like the end of an era that we were never part of, because we never had an Xbox One, and the Xbox One generation is officially over at this point. So there you go.
The sad thing is, I don't really feel like we miss anything.
I don't either. Like, I've just never really had a need to go out and pick one up, and I still don't. So, you know, whatever. Yeah. This is cool, though. The Hitman trilogy, the new Hitman games, are coming to Game Pass next week. That's a pretty big deal. That's a big get for those games. Apparently, are really good. So look for those coming to Game Pass next week. So well done.
More games that we do not have time to play.
It's ridiculous. Game Pass is just absurd. So Horizon Forbidden West has been leaked. The game is available out there in its almost finished state. Apparently it's missing several assets and that kind of thing. But there is a playable leaked version of it a month before launch that theoretically you could get your hands on. It feels like a lot of work for a game that's going to be out in a month. But just on that note, because we saw this same thing happen with The Last of Us 2, and just it's crazy that these games are getting leaked in this way before their release. So the big thing is you can go and find, like, all the story details of Horizon Forbidden West. Like, that's all out on the internet at this point if you so choose to go look for it. And so, yeah, wild that happens.
That's crazy.
So and then you mentioned the Take-Two. It just blows my mind. Just wild. I'll mention this one. I don't remember if we talked about this. Maybe we brought it up on a show, but it just popped up as progress on this, that there's a Fallout TV show that's being produced by Amazon. I am actually into that idea.
I am into that idea. I
don't think that's awful.
I need to watch The Wheel of Time. That's on. That's next on my list, is to watch The Wheel of Time. I'm into the idea of Fallout, because Fallout's a pretty wide open world. Like, there's a few things about Fallout that you could throw in there and say that's quote-unquote canon or whatever, but essentially the world of Fallout is just, hey, the whole world got nuked, so now what are you going to do? And so I like this idea, because there's no characters really.
Yep.
Fallout.
Yep.
Other than like Three Dog. you know who Three Dog is, and you might know who the robot is, and you like there's a couple characters, but there's not that many. And so it's really just this wide open canvas.
Yeah. Yeah. And the aesthetic of Fallout is super cool. The like, you know, like 40s vibe with post-apocalyptic world, like that feels like it should make really cool TV. Like you should be able to make a really interesting show just with that, like starting point, you know, like what happens if nuclear fallout happened in, you know, 1940, whatever, 1950, whatever, like, what does the world look like, 100 years later? It seems ripe for a fascinating TV show if it's executed well, and Amazon obviously has the money to do it.
They have the money to do it, and this is better than something like, say, a Mass Effect kind of a thing.
Yeah.
With a very established story and very established characters. And like I said, Fallout's wide open.
You could do whatever. You could do something completely new, because that's kind of what every Fallout game is, right? Like, you just, like, it's the same basic premise, but you have that in these different areas, different cities. It seems very, very ripe for something good. Also, you could screw it up really easy too. It could be terrible. But I'm really excited about the prospect of it. So, all that said, releases, not a ton happening right now, with the exception of God of War is now officially out on the PC. And you go pick it up on Steam, and that just still boggles my mind. like Horizon, obviously, we saw Days Gone come out. But like God of War is a PlayStation franchise. You know, like Horizon, there's only one game so far. Same with Days Gone. Like, of course, those were first-party PlayStation titles. But there's something about those that, you know, when they're coming to PC, you're kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, I get that. But, like, God of War, like, it's been a PlayStation game for 20 years. And now it's on a PC, and that feels both very strange and very cool.
It is weird. And the other weird thing about it is that we played that on the PlayStation, and I have absolutely zero desire to go pick it up. Like, when it's like $5.
Sure.
And I want to see how pretty it is, then I'll go pick it up. But otherwise, I have no desire to go pick it up.
It is a stellar game. Like, it is just a phenomenal, like, game of the year quality game. And it is one that I've not had any desire to go back and play again. You know, like, there's games I'm like, oh, I need to pick that back up at some point. God of War was an experience that playing through it was fantastic. And then when I was done with it, I was able to move on. And I appreciate that, too. You know, like, that's a nice thing to be able to do with a game.
Yeah, I'm very happy about that. And I'm very happy about the fact that I don't have to play it again.
Yep.
So
for sure. So all that said, go by gamingunsensored.com, see the show notes. A couple of things we didn't get to, but we covered most of it. We did a good job today.
Why, for the first show of the year, like, that's a good thing.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of news going on, so that helps us too.
One thing that we have to tell you about is there's all kinds of stuff going on the Facebook page. Sam's building guitars. I'm trying to figure out a way to con him into sending us a guitar. We may have to pay him as a show to build us a Gaming Uncensored guitar. I'm not there yet, though. Like, I'm trying to think of some sort of, like, trade out. Like, what can we do for Sam? They would help him out, but I'm really finding that interesting. So you can definitely go over there and check out what's going on with the Facebook page. The Twitter is always interesting. We got that as well. We've got the voicemail line at 509-GAME-210. We've got the Patreon. We need your money.
Yes.
We need your money. And also, I have to mention that if you are a company out there and you need a show to sponsor, we are that show.
We are in the market, if you can't tell.
Yes, we are, absolutely. So if you are a company that is looking to sponsor a podcast, we are that podcast. Send us an email, gaminguncensored@gmail.com. We'll gladly take your money and talk about your product.
For sure.
We will totally do that. gaminguncensored@gmail.com. Other than that, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
All right, I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. This has been another episode of Gaming Uncensored. First one of 2022, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gaminguncensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.